I'm Meg Dahl, your Unbreakable host. Welcome to the show. From Barbados. I just spent the last week there, and as always, it was absolutely amazing. So for those of you who have been following along with me for the past several years, you know that Barbados is one of my favorite places in the entire world. This was my sixth time going there. So super grateful to have been able to get there again this year, but it always feels so good to come back home. Now, one of my favorite things about travel is that I believe whenever we travel, there's always something we learn about ourselves or we grow in a new way. And for me, I know many of you know my history with disordered eating and food obsession and all of that disorderedness and stress and anxiety around food. And all of that stuff used to prevent me from traveling or enjoy traveling. Now, I remember the first time I ever went to Barbados, I really enjoyed it, but food was such a focus of mine. I was constantly thinking about food. I never tried any of the local dishes because I was scared. I was really scared to let go of the control I had around food and just eat. I was so scared, and because I was controlling my food choices, I was just staying in my comfort zone, essentially, right? And every single year, I can reflect back to that first year and see, you know, how much I've grown within that past year. And now, where I am today, reflecting, you know, 6 years ago, it's pretty wild to see where I am now and experience that. I tried actually a local dish for the very first time in my entire life. I was at one of the restaurants and the lady approached me and asked me if I wanted to learn how to make one of their famous dishes. It's called pudding and souse. Now, for those of you who have gone to Barbados before, you will definitely know what pudding and souse is. It is by far their most authentic, traditional Bajan dish. So they serve it every Saturday. It is a dish that basically the entire island eats on Saturdays. So the pudding is made with wheat flour. So I didn't try that. You can't really get that gluten-free. So they use wheat flour to thicken up grated sweet potato that they steam. So they grate sweet potato and make a pudding, like so a sweet potato pudding essentially. They grate it and steam it with some wheat flour and a bunch of spices and herbs. And that is the pudding. And then for the souse, that is what I finally tried this year and learned how to make. So I will actually be sharing the recipe with you guys on my website, megtherhn.com. So watch out for that recipe. But essentially, it is chicken feet and pork head and pork feet, and then topped with a freshly made like cucumber pickle that's really spicy. So I actually had this dish two times while I was there this year, and it just felt really awesome because I remember the opportunity presenting itself probably 6 or 5 years ago, and I was just so scared of the unknown that I never tried these authentic dishes before. And here I am just last week sitting down to this meal for the second time while I was there because I loved it so much. And it just felt so great, so free. And I know so many of you listening to this podcast and anyone who works with me or follows me, I know you guys do so because you want more freedom within your life. So, after sharing that little story with you guys, you know that this is an area of life and teaching that I'm so passionate about. So, I wanted to welcome Jill Coleman to the show. Now, Jill posts a lot about mindset, and Jill is amazing at mindset around business, which is, one of the main reasons why I follow her, actually. And so if you're not following her yet, her Instagram handle is JillFit. But you can just search Jill Coleman and you will find her everywhere. But really, she is very good at creating systems for improving your mindset and changing your mindset. And as she talks about in today's episode, it's more about changing your perception, right? So I am super excited for you guys to listen to today's episode because instead of getting her to talk about mindset around business, I really wanted to welcome her on the show today and talk about mindset or self-perception around food. And then she got talking about self-trust, and I know that's a huge barrier for so many of you is coming to trust yourself around food. So I really wanted to dive into that with her as well. So we have a great conversation today. So many takeaways for you guys, and I know you are going to love today's episode. So why don't we get there? If you guys have any questions that you want to hear answered in regards to mindset and food, or any questions about this topic at all, I would love to do another episode for you guys because this is what I've been through. This is what I know, and I am always here for you guys. So let's get to today's episode. Welcome to the show, Jill. I'm so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so pumped. I feel like we've been trying to do this for a while, so this is fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been following you for years, and you've had such a huge impact on my life in so many ways that you don't even know. But one thing that I always think of when I think of you is this incredible mindset that you have and that you're so passionate about educating others on. And I cannot wait to get into that with you.
Amazing. Yeah, I love it. It just fits right into Unbreakable You. I think that there's, so many things that we can talk about under the umbrella of mindset that are so applicable to that.
Yeah, so for those who are listening and don't know who you are, can you give us a little intro first?
Sure. So yeah, I Jill Coleman, my business is called JillFit at jillfit.com. And basically, I started out just loving fitness, started out as a full-time fitness professional, went to school for exercise science, got a master's in nutrition, just really wanted to understand the human body and wanted to be able to use food and exercise to manipulate, really to start to manipulate my physique. So my early 20s, I got really, as one does, if you're traditionally like an athlete or used to maybe extreme fitness, I got into extreme fitness. I was doing fitness competitions, I was doing fitness modeling, and each time I was doing that, I was having to diet and do extreme dieting. And in one hand, we get into maybe manipulating nutrition or becoming a fitness professional because we like researching and we like learning new things. But at one point it just became information overload and it was too much. And I liked the idea of I can eat this thing and my body can look a certain way. And I really got addicted to the affirmation of, if I look a certain way, I'm getting the approval that I want. I'm getting the affirmation. People are asking me about what I'm doing. And it was the first time in my life that I really received that much attention. And I know it seems kind of silly and it feels like an ego, you know, insecurity, ego pursuit, but that's really what it was for about 10 years. And it wasn't until I was in my late 20s when I decided to start my business at Jill Fit as a blog. And was like, you know what? I really need to figure out a way to not only get over my own food and body issues, but help other people. It just can't be about me and my body and my physique and do I look good? And so that's when I started Jill Fit as a blog, did not know what I was doing, and just basically started blogging every day for 2 years and just built a body of work, super consistent recipes, workouts, tips, tools. And this was back in the kind of golden age of blogging where people were still like reading long form content. And I hooked up with a company called Metabolic Effect, which I'm certain maybe people have heard of as well. Fat loss, fitness, nutrition, lifestyle information. And from there, Jill Fit kind of just took off. And now I do mostly business coaching for fitness professionals. So it's been a little bit of a pivot. But as I've grown my business, I'm like, oh, I kind of need to learn business. And so it's just because you're good at fitness or nutrition doesn't necessarily mean you're good at business. So I'm learning that and also teaching that.
Awesome. Yeah, you do so many different things. And I know before we started recording here, we talked about mindset and how mindset is just like this huge umbrella. And we can talk about mindset in regards to food and mindset in regards to personal development, but also business. But I know the majority of the people that are listening today, and I mean, I wish I could talk to you about all of the things, and we might, but I think a really good place for us to start is mindset around food. The majority of the women that I work with are really struggling in that area. And if I could empower them and support them in becoming more unbreakable in that area of their life, that would be a huge blessing for them. And I know you have so much to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is awesome. It's a great place to begin because I think for a lot of us, we tend to maybe go down the diet rabbit hole where a lot of times we don't know that we're doing this, right? Maybe the first time you ever dieted, you saw a lot of change in your body and you kind of got addicted to like, oh, I can manipulate how I look based on what I put in my mouth or how much exercise I do or what type of exercise I do. And it's really easy to get caught up in those kind of external motivators. And so for a lot of us, maybe we have a history of dieting and we kind of over time stopped asking questions about our personal preferences, psychological sensitivities, unique metabolism. We kind of go, okay, what are the rules that I need to follow? And sometimes it takes like a few years, 5 years, 10 years to get to that point. And I work mostly with women who are like super obsessed with food. Mm-hmm. They maybe done a lot of yo-yo dieting and they're constantly thinking about food. They're either making food, buying food, eating food, thinking about food, washing dishes because they just ate. Like it's this constant mental calculation and, you know, macro counting and not that that stuff is necessarily bad, but it can take over your life and it can feel like a full-time job. And so when we talk about mindset, really, I want to kind of mindset, the word mindset gets thrown around a lot. I like to think in super simple terms, it's your perception. It's just how you're seeing the world. It's how you're seeing yourself. It's how you're seeing and you're interacting with food or your significant other or your business. It's the perception that you choose. And when I started doing that work, I was like, oh, this is cool. It's not just like life is happening to me. Like I can't, you know, for example, if you're maybe obsessed with food or you're yo-yo dieting or you're doing restricted dieting and then maybe binging, you know, you kind of feel like it's happening to you. You feel weak. You feel you have guilt. You have shame. You have remorse. And you feel like those aren't choices. You just feel like I eat bad, which means I should feel guilty, or I overeat, so I should feel shame about that, or I eat these things and that's bad or that's wrong. And these are these automatic connections that we're making. And what mindset work does is it slows down time to create a choice there, right? I overeat, inherently not bad. I suck. That's a choice, right? So that little piece in between is where we get to go, okay, maybe I overeat, But that also doesn't mean that I'm a bad person. It also doesn't mean I suck at this. It also doesn't mean I don't have any willpower. It also doesn't mean that I'm just, you know, I'm going to be overweight or obese my entire life, right? So there's that moment in between where we can choose something like self-compassion, or we can choose something like giving ourselves the benefit of the doubt, or we can choose something like gratitude to help us get back on track faster. So we're not spending a ton of time beating ourselves up. And so when it comes to food, the mindset tools that I think about is self-perception. How am I seeing myself? Am I berating myself? Am I shaming myself all the time? Am I judging myself for bad choices? Am I putting things on a do not eat list or a bad foods list and then associate being bad by eating those things? So these are all some of those like really esoteric things that maybe we don't think about. We just automatically do them because we had a coach who tells us do not eat these, you know, 20 foods. And so it's just this rule-based thing. And I love talking about mindset around food because food can be a control mechanism, right? Just as well as exercise can be a control mechanism, money can be a control mechanism, success, like all these things that for me, ultimately, we want to get to the point of being able to trust ourselves around food, right? So releasing that need to constantly have our food made in our Tupperwares, made in our kitchen. You know, I can't have certain foods in the house because I don't trust myself around them. So really it's going from that control mechanism, I can't do anything, I can't go on vacation because I'm not going to be around my food, to learning to trust yourself in all different situations. And when you get that self-trust, when you build your confidence, you actually tend to eat better because you're making choices from a place of autonomy instead of from a place of this is the rule and I have to just follow it or else I'm bad. And a lot of us don't think about that stuff until it's like we're years down the path and go like, how did I get here? And then we have to unlearn a lot of the traditional dieting rules.
And was that you? Like, were you in that spot where you were like, how did I get here after so many years of being in really intense fitness situations?
Totally. So, you know, it really got to a point where I was so miserable and I had several aha moments over the period of like a couple of years. And one of which was at this point I was doing a minimum of 2 hours of cardio a day. And I was, for some reason, again, control mechanism, right? If I just wake up and I do this many minutes on cardio, then I'm going to be safe or okay, or my world's not going to implode, like whatever it was that I was trying to prevent. And I remember waking up and I was so exhausted. And at the time my ex-husband was with me and I was just like, and I remember just like bawling. I was just like crying. Like, I can't believe I have to do 2 hours of cardio today. And I was like, I just wish this wasn't my life. I wish that, because I didn't know what else to do, right? Like there wasn't an alternative to that. It was like, if I don't do this, then something's going to just, then I'm not going to have control anymore. I'm going to be out of control. And then my whole life is going to blow up. My friends and family aren't going to respect me. My husband's going to leave me. My clothes aren't going to fit. No one's going to, you know, like all these kind of things that we just go all the way down there. We don't give ourselves the chance to learn a different way. And so slowly over time, I started cutting back and cutting back and cutting back and going, oh, like my clothes still fit. That's interesting. And then you kind of have that experience and that body of evidence that your world doesn't implode when you start to make some of these alternative choices. So yeah, I had a lot of wake up moments and it wasn't overnight. I wish I could say that it was, but it took me about like 2 to 3 years to fully make the shift from like what I would consider to be super neurotic, extremely obsessed, body obsessed, food obsessed, to, you know, really minimizing the amount of time I'm thinking about food and the amount of energy that I'm expending in that like self-conscious, insecure place.
Right. So it wasn't an overnight switch, right? You didn't go from doing 2 hours of cardio every single day to being where you are today with your relationship with fitness and food. But one thing that you brought up a few times now is constantly thinking about food. And I know that's a huge one for the girls that I work with. And I mean, it was huge for me years ago. It was something that I thought of in the middle of the night when I first woke up in the morning. And like, how do we get over that? You know, I don't think about food how I did one time in my life, but I would love for you to elaborate on that.
Yeah. So totally understand that. Like, I remember I used to wake up in the mornings because I used to have like a nighttime eating thing. That would be mine. Like I'd wake up, have the best intentions in the morning, super clean breakfast, go to the gym, get a good workout, like eating pretty well. And then I would be so drained from the day. Like I think a lot of people are, right? We have that like decision fatigue. We're making all these decisions and our willpower is at its lowest. Our willpower is finite. It's at its lowest at the end of the day. And so for me, it was like dinner. Okay. I had a really long day. I deserve to have this, you know, ice cream or this thing. And I'd be just like grazing all night long from dinner all the way to bed. There's little snacks here, bites there, all this kind of stuff, just overeating. And I would just shut my brain off and be like, I'll just, you know, I just want to eat what I want to eat. I'm not going to worry about, I'm not going to stress out. I'm just going to have what I want. And I wake up next morning and be like, oh, I can't believe I did that again. Like it would just be this daily and even weekly after weekends of just feeling, waking up and thinking first thing, oh my God, how much food did I eat last night? I ate so much food last night, right? And then I'd go, okay, I just have to be super tight today and I have to like just get to the gym and do all things. So it becomes this negative feedback loop, right? Because you're overeating, at least for me, I was overeating. And then I was having to do more exercise to burn off calories. And then because I did so much exercise, my hunger and cravings were through the roof and I wanted even more food. And so in order to yank myself out of that, the first thing was I had to like trust that there was a different way. And when you're in that place and you're in that very tightly held, controlled space, and we like control, like it feels organized. Like I have a plan and I'm have this food list. And if I just follow these rules, then I'm going to be safe. So in order to kind of start to do something different, you have to remind yourself that the old way is going to be there. Like there's always more cardio if you want to do that. You can always go back to restrictive dieting. You can always go back to this like yo-yo thing you're doing. So in order to, you have to kind of trust that like the old way is still going to be there. So let me like take one step out. So for me, it was just starting to cut back on my exercise. And I remember at the time thinking, people were saying, well, if you just do less exercise, you won't be as hungry. And I was like, you don't know me. I have the biggest appetite. I don't trust myself, all this kind of stuff. And I started pulling back on my exercise. And to my pleasant surprise, my hunger and my appetite actually started to go down. And so not overnight, but like over a series of a couple of weeks. And I was like, wow, I'm naturally not wanting to eat as much because I'm doing less cardio. And then I pulled back on some of my eating and I was doing even less cardio. And it took me like probably 6 months to cut back to the point where I was doing 30 minutes of cardio a day. And like I said, my clothes all still fit. My food regulated itself. I still wasn't eating like, you know, really like all the time. Well, I still had binging episodes and overindulgences, but over time I started giving myself these little kind of nutritional gimmies, foods that maybe are not like perfect eating, but they're also not like eating a dozen donuts. It's kind of this like middle road. So maybe in the paleo diet, like I know you've talked about that quite a bit, things like bacon, avocado, you know, things that really are satisfying, maybe a little bit of cheese even, that typically would not be on a competition diet. But because I was like just trying to test out some of these foods to feel a little bit more satisfied to prevent the binging at night and on the weekends. And over time it started working and it was terrifying the first time I started doing it.
And it sounds like you allowing yourself to try these like new foods, you're learning more about yourself too, right? So I really want to get into the topic of learning to trust ourselves, because I think when we have those aha moments or hit that like rocky bottom where we're like, wow, I can't continue on like this, we know we have to move into this place of trust. But after so many years of not trusting ourselves, like, what does that even look like? How do we even start?
Yeah. So it's such a great question. You know, when we don't trust ourselves, we're doubting ourselves constantly and we're constantly trying to control our environment. So it's like, oh, there's either two things. I'm going on vacation and I'm either going to diet ahead of time so I can just be in vacation mode and eat anything I want, or I'm going to try and keep my diet super tight over vacation. Like those are the only two options. The middle option of like, you know, maybe I'll like loosen up the reins a little bit, because we just don't trust ourselves. We think if we loosen up a little bit, we're going to go all the way. And so it's how do you manage and how do you kind of start navigating the middle? And I think that that's, it's, you know, one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough, and I think this is a huge step for me, is starting to find something else to do. To be honest, like when your passion and your purpose and your meaning is all wrapped up in how do I look and what's my body look like? And, you know, am I getting fat? Am I getting skinny? Like all these kind of things, you don't have enough space to create something else. And so some people I would like honestly recommend, for me, a lot changed when I started my business because I couldn't afford, if I wanted to be successful in my business, I could not afford to keep the same lifestyle and spend all the time cooking and making and eating and thinking and being at the gym three times a day. Like I just couldn't. I was like, I need to figure this out. So what are some of the steps that I can do to minimize the amount of time and mental energy I'm spending on these things? And over time, I was just like, you know what? I'm willing to maybe gain a couple pounds if it means that I don't think about this stuff all day so I can have the time to build my business. And once I started getting some wins in business, I was like, oh, okay, I have something over here that gives me a sense of meaning and purpose. So I don't, like a lot of people when they have kids, maybe this is kind of like they make that shift, right? Because they go, oh, it's not just all about me anymore. Or I do have something else, or I feel like I'm contributing to the world in another way. Before it was like, the only thing I had was my body, right? If my body looked good, then I was worthy. If I didn't look good, I wasn't worthy. But now I'm like, oh, I'm helping people over here with their transformations, them get results, them have some wins, and I can feel worthy, like I'm contributing when I'm doing that. And so I do think like you need a hobby or you need a skill or you need to learn something else or immerse yourself in something else where you can help others potentially get a win. Maybe it's just volunteering. Maybe it's, you know, doing charity. Like there's a lot of things that you can do to get yourself out of that really myopic headspace.
Yeah, that's so good. So finding another area to put your focus for sure. Something I want to ask you about is rules. Okay. So with rules, we are in control. And I think rules lead us to this place of having these issues with food. Where do you stand on rules? Are you, do you live your life right now without any food rules? Or how do you navigate that middle ground that you keep mentioning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't. As I live by so many rules for such a long time, I'm like a rebel with it. Like I hate rules. I hate even like personally enforced rules. I like, if I make a rule for myself, I immediately break it because I'm like, I just don't even like it. So right now I'm pretty much really autonomous. So when we talk about the middle path, right, I call it navigating the middle. So most of us, or we've had experience where we're all or nothing. We're going on a diet. We got the food list. We're going to the store. We're getting the things. We're going to have the, and we have, and it feels organized. That's why we like rules. We go, well, if I just follow these 10 rules, then, you know, and do these things, then I'm a guaranteed an outcome. And what happens is we don't take into account things like willpower, habit change, the fact that like we might not even like these foods. A lot of times we don't even ask ourselves like, do I actually like these foods? Are they enjoyable to me or do I dread them? We don't even take into account those things. And so rules feel organized. It feels like linear and predictable. If we just do A and B, we get C results. And as humans, that feels good to us. It's certain, right? It's certainty. And so to not have rules feels really scary. It feels like we don't have these rules, then like, what are we gonna do? Everything's gonna go crazy. And so when you navigate the middle, you don't have a rule, but you have guidelines. And so you have things like, I call it satisfaction factor. Like what's the satisfaction factor of this meal? Do I feel satisfied? On a scale from 1 to 10, how satisfied do I feel? On a scale from 1 to 10, how full do I feel? On a scale from 1 to 10, how hungry am I? And these are all just prompts to get us back in touch with our biofeedback to like, just go, okay, like most of us don't even think about when it's time to eat. We go, oh, I eat at 7, 10, 1, 4, and 7. We don't even ask ourselves, are we actually hungry? Or are we starving? Or are we good to go and we can eat in 30 minutes? Or like, we don't even do those intakes. So mindfulness is really the tool that I use. So I don't like rules, I like tools. And so when you have a tool, you just go, okay, this guides me throughout the day. Like I don't need to have a rule because I trust myself enough to check in with hunger, cravings, mood, energy, satiety, satisfaction, these kind of like qualitative, right? These qualitative check-ins which are tougher to learn, but once you learn them, you have them for life, versus a rule, which we can have right now, but over time they might not end up working for us, or we may feel bad, or we, you know, I don't like a rule because you're either right or wrong. And for me, there's so much gray area. And when you have the tool of mindfulness and you're constantly checking in with yourself, you trust yourself. So you don't need rules because you have the ultimate rule, which is I trust myself. And that's the ultimate in control, really.
Love it. See, this is why I had you on 100%. So when it comes to mindfulness, this is something that some people are super not into and not familiar with. I would love to hear more from you on mindfulness because, I mean, like you said, you used to overeat. And obviously there would be a lack of mindfulness there. So how did you bring that into your life?
Mm-hmm. Totally. And so I think you really have to be in a place where like you kind of want to do this, right? So if you had told me back then, or maybe when you were going through your stuff, like, oh, just be mindful, or oh, just eat when you're hungry, like, or just eat intuitively, like I just wouldn't have, not only would I not have understood it, but I wouldn't have wanted to do it. Like I would have just been like, no, that's not good enough. Or, oh, that's too, like, it just wasn't sexy enough, right? It wasn't strict enough. It wasn't good enough. And so you have to kind of be in the mindset space of like even being open to that concept. So I work with a lot of women who have been years and years of yo-yo dieting. They do reach a point of like just literally throwing their hands up and going like, I'll try anything. And so once they're there, I'm like, look, it's going to take a lot of courage to undo some of this stuff and learn a new way. But if you're ready, let's go. And so mindfulness, I love mindfulness because, well, I hate it and I love it. I hate it because the word, people just, their eyes start to glaze over like, yeah, Jill. Okay. Sounds good. Mindfulness, blah, blah, blah. Like no one's really teaching. What I've tried to do with my curriculum is like teach, how do you do it? Instead of just what is it? How do you actually do it? And so mindfulness to me, Mac Daddy tool, if you could just get mindfulness, you can trust yourself anywhere, any situation around any foods. So you've heard people say, well, I just can't have that in my house. Mindfulness is the thing that allows you to have any food in your house and be able to take a bite of it or take a piece of it or take a sip of it and not have to go overboard. And so it's, and not from a place of white knuckling it, like don't eat more, don't eat more, don't eat more. But instead from a place of like, I'm good because I'm checking in with my body. I feel satisfied. I feel satiated. So mindfulness is just that mental check-in with what's going on in your body. And so that's really where intuitive eating comes in. But if you had told, if you tell someone intuitive, just eat intuitively, like that means nothing. So you have to kind of create that list of tools and that curriculum to go with it. So a couple of things that I do to help people just literally get back in touch with their cravings, their hunger, their energy levels, things like that, is two things. Number one is I have them set their phone for like every 3 hours. So not so that they'll leave, but just that they will give them that prompt to check in. So maybe your phone goes off every 3 hours and you just go, literally you just go, how hungry am I right now? Could I eat in 30 minutes? Am I not hungry? Can I eat an hour? Like it's just that mental check-in, and all we need is that prompt. And mindfulness is really cool because once you start practicing it just a little bit, like consistently, it actually starts feeling really easy, really fast. It feels like, oh my God, that seems like a big hassle. I got to set my phone. I got to do this thing. It's going off. But again, once you learn it, it's like this low level of automated thinking that's happening all the time. So you don't have to like work at it. Whereas obsessive thinking is like you're constant, it's work, right? Whereas mindfulness is also thinking, but it's low level automated thinking that's happening all the time. And so setting your phone and doing those check-ins, and over time, you'll start to feel the times of day when you're more hungry, or if you're craving something, what am I craving right now? Okay, cool. And then it becomes data versus good, bad, right, or wrong. There's no right time to eat. There's no wrong time to eat. There's no right time to have chocolate. There's no wrong time to have chocolate. It's just literally honoring what's going on in your body. So that's one. The other is, we can talk about like eating to 80% fullness and stuff like that. That's a good one. Another one is just because we have to kind of create scenarios where we prompt this stuff. Because most of us are not thinking about this stuff. We only have two modes, either starving or stuffed. Like most of us, that's the only thing we feel. We know if we're starving and we know if we're unbuttoning our pants, we're so full. Like those are the only two things, right? And so mindfulness goes like, oh, instead of just these two ends of the spectrum, there's like 10 little things in between that we could be like a little bit hungry or like kind of hungry, like I could eat pretty soon. Like there's all these different shades of hunger within that range. Same thing with cravings. And so the other one I use is sticky notes. So you can take sticky notes, you can put them around, you know, your house, you can put them in your, on your mirror, on your computer, on your steering wheel, on your refrigerator, not to remind you not to eat, but to remind you to check in, right? So if you see that, it's just a prompt. How am I feeling right now? And like I said, over time, you don't need to do this that much. You do it like for a week or two and you'd be like, wow, I just started noticing I'm just more in tune with my body than I've ever been. So again, at the beginning, more work. Later on, it's a work that does serve you. And so mindfulness is just literally checking in and then going, do I eat now? Or if I could wait a little bit, you know, what's my plan? It gives me some time to create a healthy strategy. That's what mindfulness is. It just slows down time and gives you time to surf the urge. If you're not around food and you're starving, and you're like, okay, you can just feel the hunger and not feel out of control versus before, when we're just trying to use willpower, when we get to the point of feeling starving, we just do brain shutdown mode, right? Like brain shutdown, eat everything, don't want to think about it. I'll think about it tomorrow, wake up super guilty, feeling remorseful, et cetera. So that's kind of like the old way. Mindfulness is just like an ongoing, like I said, way to slow down time and have a more strategic way of eating.
I love that. And just even how you described like obsessiveness, like that's exhausting. That's an exhausting mindset to be in. Whereas even just like thinking about being a mindful eater, like how much better does that even feel just when you think about it, right? But one thing that I really liked what you said is when you mention mindfulness, a lot of people, like their eyes will just like gloss over and it's just like something that they kind of write off. They think that it's actually not super important. Whereas like you said, it's kind of like that top-notch key tool that everyone needs. Another thing that you mentioned earlier in the episode is gratitude. And that is also something I think a lot of people write off, but it's something that we don't often talk about in regards to like our relationship with food. So would love to hear you talk more about gratitude in terms of like, how does that even fit with this getting into a better relationship with food?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the nature of, such a great question. I think the nature of the all or nothing way of eating or the black and white way of eating is that you're either perfect or you're wrong. Like those are the only two options, right? So what gratitude does is it is an acknowledgement of the middle parts, right? Of the journey. And so it always baffles me that if we're getting ready to, I don't know, learn a new language or getting ready to learn a new instrument, we expect to mess up, right? We're like, oh, well, we're definitely going to mess up through that. But when it comes to healthy eating, we don't give ourselves any wiggle room. We're just like, it needs to be perfect or else. And like, it's so strange to me because eating healthy is a practice. It's like something you have to work at. And so gratitude is just acknowledging the ways in which you have become more mindful. So asking yourself, like, again, maybe you have like an alarm on your phone, like once a month even, where it goes off and you just go, okay, like, let's just do like a little bit of an intake. How, like maybe compared to last month, how am I doing this month based on binging and even just awareness? And so I do a course called 4-Week Food Obsession Bootcamp, and we're in week number 2 right now. And so we got on the second week call and I was like, how was last week? And I had them literally like write down their experience last week. And most of us don't even take the time to do that little check-in, write it down in the journal, and then we just on to the next thing, right? On to the next thing, on to the next thing. And so gratitude gives us an opportunity to look at how far we've come and go, like, man, and use that evidence to propel our confidence moving forward. So if we can look back and go, wow, like you've come a long way, or even if you haven't come a long way, you come a little way. And that's valuable because anytime that we want to build confidence in a new area, we need to get some wins under our belt. And so gratitude allows for us to kind of chronicle those wins, take them in, feel them, write them down, and then we feel much more propelled to continue going.
Love it. So do you have a daily gratitude practice?
I don't. Actually, I do. I wish I did. I did when I was going through this process. I absolutely did, because for me, it was really uncomfortable a lot of the time. Like it was like, okay, like this does not feel comfortable. I know I should go back to the gym right now, but I'm just not going to, because I'm going to like just eat this food and then like not go exercise it off. And you had to be in those moments of, this is a different way of doing things. And it took a while for that to feel good. And so I did have these gratitude practices of like, okay, look how far you've gotten. Look how long it's been since you overate. Look how long, look at you being able to take a bite of something and not have to polish the whole thing off. I think it's really important to look at those things and really just chronicle them. And a lot of times we don't because we expect perfection. I don't anymore, but I do love gratitude in general. And sometimes I know when I'm feeling, if I'm feeling triggered, if I'm feeling like I'm struggling in an area, not with food anymore, but yeah, maybe with business or relationships, and I'm starting to feel myself kind of get triggered, I do go back to gratitude. If I feel myself maybe comparing myself to other people or, you know, feeling badly or feeling imposter syndrome, I kind of go back to that, like, okay, like you've done some stuff. Like you need to, Jill, you're like, you're pretty awesome. Like you have done a good amount of things. Look at the body of work that you've built. Look at how many people you've helped. And I have to go back to those like places. I actually have a thank you folder on my computer of screenshots from social media. And I have one in my email inbox from people who just send me thank yous. And like, it all just goes in there. And sometimes I just need to whip them out and just read through them to remind myself of the kind of impact that I'm having. Because honestly, if I can't appreciate what I've already had, then I have no business getting any more. Do you know what I'm saying?
I totally get it. Absolutely. So we're going to take a little bit of a spin here. So we've been talking a lot about mindset in regards to food, but you don't have a daily gratitude practice. And I mean, it's not, there's no rule saying you do, but you are like a badass business woman that I look up to. So I would love to know, like, what personal development stuff are you doing as like a daily or consistent practice that got you to where you are today?
Yeah. So honestly, I try to say yes to as many scary things as possible. So I try to say yes, even when I'm in that place of like, ooh, like, I don't know that I'm good at that, or I've never done that before. If an opportunity either arises, or I'll go and seek up an opportunity. So just to give you some context, I joined a high level mastermind a few months ago. And it was the first time I put in like, well, not, it was like the probably, it had been a while since I had made that much of a financial investment in my business. It had been like a few years. And so I was like, okay, this is a little bit scary, but this is like the next step. And so did that, feel really good about it. But now all of a sudden, I'm surrounded by people who are just like way up here, right? Either financially or, you know, impact wise, or they've been doing it longer, whatever it is, which of course is the whole point of a mastermind, is like be around people who are like, can push you and like elevate you and inspire you. And so I had to check myself. I had a few moments of like, wow, I haven't, because I'm used to being the teacher, right? People come to me and ask me the questions. Whereas I'm like, here I am in a room of people who are further along in certain capacities. And I'm like, wow, I really need to learn from these people. And I started getting triggered. I started comparing myself and I started forgetting all the work that I had done. And I started feeling like an imposter. Like, what do I know? You know, I don't want to put myself out there because these people obviously know more than me, right? That's just the story I was telling. And so some of the personal development work that I do is find ways to be triggered by doing things that are outside my comfort zone. So if I get a message, if like someone wants me to speak somewhere and it's on like a new topic I've never spoken before, I'm like, yep, I'll do it. And then like send the email and like run away. Like, I'm just like, all right, I have to just do it really quick and say yes. And then from there I'll figure it out. Like, I just trust myself enough to figure it out, even if I've never done it before. And every time I take those steps into the next, because no matter where you're at, there's always like a next level scary thing, right? To put yourself out there, to be more vulnerable, to challenge yourself in a new way, to learn a new skill. And every time I do that, that's honestly some of the best personal development work I can do. So you had mentioned before we got on that that I just started a podcast. So I'll probably have some questions for you. We're about 15 or 16 episodes in, and it's the most vulnerable I've ever been on the internet. And it's talking about things I've never talked about. And that is kind of like a next step, personal development, dealing with the fallout, trying to figure that out, trusting myself enough to, you know, responses or judgment or criticism or whatever that is. So I would say personal development wise, I'm always looking to get outside my comfort zone, always putting myself on the hook to do something a little bit scary, a little bit bigger, and then work, and then literally like struggling through it and like being like, okay, and coming on the other end and starting to build my confidence that way. But if we're talking about super tactical stuff, podcasts, I listen to podcasts constantly. Love listening to different personal development podcasts. I listen to audiobooks. I read, probably read like, you know, 2-3 hours a day. That's pretty much it. I'm constantly trying to take information in because I'm constantly creating stuff. So personal development for me means just exposing myself to even just different opinions that I don't agree with and challenging myself in new ways. So yeah.
So if you cool.
If you want to master personal development, just start a business.
Seriously though. Yeah, it requires so much personal development. So I do want to talk a little bit more about your podcast, but first, do you think saying yes to scary things and kind of doing things that make you feel uncomfortable, can that trickle into improving your relationship with food as well?
Oh, totally. Because remember, food is about control. So if I stay in control, I'm staying in my comfort zone. I only make my food. I only see, you know, eat in my kitchen. I turn down social events. I don't go on vacation. Like all these kind of things that maybe we do to stay safe and to stay certain and to stay comfortable, because we don't trust ourselves outside of that little box. And so same exact thing is like the more experiences I start to get under my belt, the more opportunities I see. Literally, I'm like, sometimes I'll be in a situation where I'm doing something new and I'm like struggling my way through it, whether it's a talk or, you know, I don't know, doing this new business thing. And I feel like I'm up on the roof, like ceiling, looking down at myself, watching myself and going like, okay, and I'm gathering some confidence as a result of that. It's like my brain is watching me do a new thing and then going, oh, I guess Jill is someone who does new things. I guess Jill is someone who, you know, does take risks. I think, oh, Jill must be someone who can handle it. She is confident, right? So I don't quite believe it yet, but I do the action. And then as a result of doing the action, I start to see myself as someone who is more confident. And so, yes, and that totally translates across relationship with food, relationship with other people, romantic relationships, business, you know, savvy, all that kind of stuff.
Love it. So what would be the scariest yes you said business-wise?
Oh, dang. What is the scariest? You know, I've had a bunch of them and a lot of them have been like out of necessity. I was just like, you know, I want to do this big thing and I need some money. So I'm like, never done this before. I'm going to launch this thing. And it hasn't always been like, you know, rocket ship, right? It's like there are things that I've tried that haven't worked out, but I've just put myself on the hook to create products and services that I wasn't sure were going to do well. I think a lot of people never launch because they're so scared of what if no one buys? What if no one wants this? What if no one downloads this? And I've just been like, then I'll deal with it then. You know, and I think I had this kind of pivot mindset of like, if that doesn't work, it's not that I'm bad. It's just that this strategy is not right, or that the product isn't the right fit, or it's not the right timing, or I suck at marketing. Like they're just, I got to get better at this thing. So I always kind of look at taking massive action as an educational experience. So I launched a mastermind. I think some like increasing your prices can be one of the scarier things, where you just go like, ooh, I'm not sure that I'm really like worth that yet, or I need to see that. And like, you know, I mean, for us, we don't go in there just like guns blazing, like give me all the money. Like it takes some time to like work your way up, especially from someone who used to have a really a scarcity mindset around business and around money and around food, obviously. And so that translates too. So I think some of the biggest risks I've taken have always worked out because I've learned, but not everything has been like always just a really good outcome.
Yeah, that's awesome, hun. So we are wrapping up the show, but you've been just a blast here today, and I know people are going to want to listen more from you. So tell us about your podcast, because I'm loving it and it's new. So tell us about it.
So tell me, well, this is good insight for me then. Tell me what you have liked about it. What do you have enjoyed about it? Or what maybe you have not enjoyed about it?
How real you guys are, right? Yeah. I mean, I, like I said, from day one when I came across you years ago, I just felt super connected to you. And it's obviously because you're just so real and open and honest, and you share exactly what you're going through and what worked for you. And I feel like I can really trust you. So that's what I love about your show, is just like the rawness of it. And it's unlike any other podcast, right?
I hope so. That's good feedback for me, because we're just like, Danny and I will get off the recording and just be like, was that even good? We just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's kind of scary, right? It's like, you know, being more vulnerable on the internet, or being more myself, or whatever that looks like. And so it's been an amazing practice. The Best Life podcast really just came out of our desire to want to talk about some maybe more taboo topics and kind of start to normalize those things. Cause we were talking to our friends and our family and even people on the internet who write in or like, you know, tell us stuff. And they're like, and we know a lot of stuff is going on behind closed doors, whether that's food obsession, shame around food, relationship stuff, like struggles in business. And Danny and I were like, we were having the conversations with each other. My best friend, Danny J, we were having the conversations with each other and we're like, why don't we just put these on a podcast? Like, why don't we just start ripping the Band-Aid off and normalizing these things, right? And coming up with solutions for them, or just even maybe not a solution, just like, let's connect on this shared experience and make it less taboo and less scary and less illicit and go like, it's normal human shit. Like, we've been seeing this stuff. So like, can this just be seen as normal? And so, yeah, we talked about everything from like food obsession to marriage, affairs. Actually, Danny just recorded one with the daughter she gave up for adoption when she was 16. Like, we're really trying to peel back some of the layers of things that we know are happening, not with everybody, but with a good amount of people. And there's just not a lot of conversations around some of these tougher topics, you know, and especially for us, we're mid-30s, we're, you know, married for many, many years. And now kind of being like, okay, I don't know how to date now. I haven't been single since I was 18. So like, even those kind of new frontiers are interesting to talk about, and talk about them in a way that is not like weird or like taboo or wrong, but talk about them in a way that's like, this is actual life. And we've had women in 40s, 50s, 60s come out of the woodwork and be like, finally, someone's talking about this and normalizing it. Cause like, yeah, like, it's not always the most fun, right? When these things happen, whether it's relationship wise, business wise, food relationship wise, but we can at least have a shared experience and then talk about what we're going to do moving forward. And so it's really about empowerment too. I hate that word empowerment, but it's really about like, okay, like, great, let's connect. And then it's also like, okay, what do we do about this? How do we make this better? How do we improve the situation? How do we take massive action to better our situation and enjoy it more? I think that's really what it comes down to.
And I think that's another reason why I love it so much, is because I like unique podcasts that aren't just about like nutrition or like money mindset, like things like that. You're uncovering things that people don't normally talk about. And that was kind of my, you know, vision with this podcast. Is I had a nutrition related podcast for 3 years, and I noticed I was interviewing people and I had other questions above and beyond like what diet they were promoting and, you know, whatever. And I wanted to start asking those questions. And for me, like, this mindset work and being more like strong and powerful, and I don't want to overuse the word, but unbreakable version of myself, there's so many like golden nuggets that everyone has to offer in so many different areas of their life. So that's why I wanted to start this podcast and have you on, obviously. But last question for you, Jill, is what does unbreakable mean to you?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so funny because I was hoping you would ask that, because actually when you told me the name of your podcast, I loved it so much, because it's in line with something that I believe, which is the concept of being anti-fragile. So the concept of anti-fragility is like, I want to be broken down and have experienced enough struggles that I am actually, and I've been vulnerable enough that I become the strongest version of myself, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm always looking for ways to get out of my comfort zone. If I can just expose myself and just be vulnerable enough and have the experience and then see that I've survived that and I'm actually stronger as a result of that experience, whatever that is, I'm actually the strongest version of myself, right? So because I've accumulated all these experiences, like I was what I would consider like very fragile, maybe breakable in your terms, when I was doing that crazy dieting, because I had to control everything. I didn't trust myself. I was just like, had this control mechanism. Now I'm like, okay, I trust myself more. I can expose myself to more. And the more I step out of my comfort zone, the more, you know, we start to get these experiences under our belt and we see evidence that we survived and even got better as a result of those struggles. I'm just like, I can take on anything, right? Like, yeah, just give me it. I can take it on. And to me, that's what being unbreakable. It's almost like being broken in so many different ways and coming out on the other side so much stronger that you're just like, life, give it to me. You're not nearly as scared. You don't need to control everything because you trust yourself. And to me, that is like the ultimate place to be. And you do that through taking massive action, having the experiences, saying yes, even when you want to say no, and going through all of that. And ultimately, you become so much stronger as a result.
So good. And I'm really happy that you liked the name of this podcast. So thank you so much. But where can people find you? Because I know they're going to want to tune in, read all your things.
I hope so. Yeah, that would be awesome. So I am at Jill Fit on all the platforms. If you guys are just following Jill Fit, and then on Facebook at Jill Coleman, but I hang out mostly on Instagram, and my blog is jillfit.com. If you guys just want to read, there's a ton of nutrition articles. If some of this stuff resonated with you, just click on the nutrition category and there's like literally hundreds of articles.
Awesome, babe. Thank you so much for joining us this week.